So Vadim and I are here to talk about Bosch. So what is Bosch? Bosch is a tool that we wrote to do release engineering and deployment and lifecycle management of distributed services. We started kind of back in 2010, where we already had a distributed system called Cloud Foundry. And it had a number of components in it. And we were faced with a challenge of how do we manage this system? How do we deploy it? How do we maintain this over time? So the motivation behind writing Bosch in the first place is that we wanted to have a tool that was easy to use, that supported frequent changes in terms of code and also in terms of the infrastructure, where we could do updates with minimal impact, where we could support repeatable and predictable deployments. So it's a distributed system. You have to have ways of understanding the changes that you're going to make. We wanted a single tool to deal with code changes, as well as operating system updates and the release and engineering aspect. We have several groups of engineers, so we needed to be able to collaborate on changes, as well as providing self-service for the developers, so they could test their changes as they develop new code. And then we wanted to have the same process for what happens in the development cycle as when we go into kind of staging and validation and production pushes. We also had the situation where we had in-house code, source code, as well as off-the-shelf software, both in the form of source code and binary code. And then we also had a goal of being infrastructure agnostic, and we'll talk a little bit about that. So where are we today? I would say in some sense 2 years later. We do roughly non-trivial production changes twice a week. And with some lesser frequency, we do things like OS updates. Including our dev environments, we have roughly 100 clusters where we deploy software to. We have thousands of VMs. And in some test scenarios, we've been up towards 5,000 VMs. We have also done thousands of deployments using the Bosch toolchain. We use Bosch, and it's kind of interesting, as part of our code complete criteria. So you should have packaged up your code change and deployed it with Bosch before you declare it code complete and ready to go to production. And I mentioned infrastructure agnostics earlier. So we have this thing called cloud provider interface that runs on top of vSphere, obviously with VMware, AWS, and OpenStack. Bosch is also self-host, so we can use Bosch to deploy Bosch. So we have a little inception going on there. And we open sourced the project in April this year. All right. So we're going to come back to this image a couple of times in the presentation, where we, on the left-hand side, represent our code activity, our development process, and the release engineering aspect that we are trying to cover with Bosch. And then on the other side, we have services and the actual services that we are managing. So Cloud Foundry is a platform as a service for applications. And in our case, we use Bosch to manage that, although Bosch is kind of independent from Cloud Foundry, you can deploy other things using Bosch. So this table, we're going to try to run through this as quickly as possible. So in the first column, we have a notion of what we call a release, and there is a bundle of software, and there is things like packages, and jobs is our term for services. And there's like source and blobs. We have a declarative deployment manifest that we use that describes an entire service and all components and all parameters that goes into that. The third column is really the behavior of our deployments and some of the resources that we are managing. In the fourth column, we have our CLI, which is really what we use to drive any sort of change in a service that is managed by Bosch. The third one, there's some under the hood components there, but the top level is a target and a director, and the Bosch toolchain can manage different environments. So that is kind of part of that. The second to last column is stem cells, which is our kind of bare bones operating system image. And we do some interesting things around that. And then the CPI is there at the very end. All right. So in order to use Bosch, you will install the Bosch CLI. It's a Ruby application. You can get that from RubyGems. And in order to start to use Bosch, you will target that director. So that's what we're doing there. This goes against my dev environments. So when you take the CLI and target a director, so in this example, we have two directors. And the director manages some resources. We already mentioned our release bundle and the stem cell. So those are two resources that they manage. Now, with the color coding, you can see that different directors can have the same resources. So we can have the same OS template. That is a fairly static image. And releases can also be shared. So a very common use for us is to have a dev environment where we have the same bits in former release and the same stem cell. And we can do kind of meaningful, quote-unquote, dry runs in these. Like we have a set of bits and they're static. And you can use them in different deployments. And we represent the deployment manifest through the deployment box that is there. This is the slide that always kills me. So a release in Bosch is essentially a directory structure that follows certain conventions. So there are subtrees under there with different jobs and different packages, and a directory tree like under source and blobs. And the only reason why we have source and blobs is that we use Git, and Git isn't really particularly suited for large binary objects. So we try to split them out and keep them separately. The Bosch create release command, it will scan this directory tree, and it will pick up specifications for jobs and packages. In the case of packages, it will have include patterns into the source and blob trees. So you will say, these things are going to be included in this package. The job specification includes the configuration templates that we're using to parameterize configuration files. It will it will fingerprint these and build up a list of fingerprints. If there has been a previous release, it will compare it against the previous release and see if it needs to build package and job artifacts. And when all of that is said and done, there will be a release output. So in this case, it's scar dev 77.1-dev. that contains everything that is needed to deploy that service. So all source code and all files, everything that is needed to do that is kind of referenced in this release artifact. Once you have that, you did earlier target a director, and now you can upload a release. And if packages are already there, we don't have to re-upload them. It's smart enough to kind of optimize that. In this case, actually, when we built the release in the last slide, you can see there's only one component that has changed since the previous release. So that is probably the only one that needs to be updated. And once you uploaded it, any director, just by uploading it, you don't change the state of your service. It's just a resource that is available in the director, and you can later choose to use this particular release. All right, so this kind of captures what we did earlier. We use the CLI to create the release. And it will take the packages and blobs and sources, build a release, and then you can use the CLI to upload it to the director. And it will store this release in the blob store that we have with Bosch. And again, this is kind of our release structure. So we do incremental versioning. We do automatic versioning of packages. Or releases and the other components. As I said, it's self-contained, and we can publish these. So with Cloud Foundry, we have other people using Cloud Foundry. We also have like our QA team want to take a particular release and test a particular release. So we can generate the release, we can publish it. They can take the specification for that release and download it and run it in their environment. So our jobs, they're also versioned independently from the release. So multiple releases can share job versions. As I said earlier with jobs, we support templating of configuration files. We have a notion of supervision, of service supervision. So we have Bosch has a very simple contract where it asks the supervisor whether or not a job is healthy, or if it's running, or if it's stopped, or if it's failed. We have some rudimentary monitoring that essentially say the state of this job is there. And then we have some lifecycle hooks. So we have one component, for example, that need to drain its instances to another host when we do deployment. And so these are the job definitions. And at the bottom, again, packages are independently versioned. When we bundle up a package that is really source code, and as part of the deployment, we can compile code. We can compile the code that we'll use in the deployment. We have a notion of compile dependencies, but we don't have package dependencies when we deploy it. We expect that you understand the dependencies of your jobs, so that when you compose that, we don't have arbitrary dependencies getting pulled in. And it sounds maybe like a little bit of a management overhead, but I think it is your responsibility for running a distributed service to understand exactly what goes into a running instance. All right. So here we're going to talk a little bit about jobs and packages in the VM. So Bosch essentially have two notions of VMs. So as part of our deployment, we will create VMs. And we will use stem cell and some profiles to create them. But we have two types of VMs. We have a stateless VM, such as a web server. We never care about the data that is on this on this web server. If we need to recreate that, we can do that at will, and that is fine. And then we have the stateful VMs, where we would put things like a database, where we care about the data that is hauled inside this job or this VM. So we have at the bottom, so we have this layer, we have the OS image, which we don't really touch. We don't touch the packages that are installed, and we touch very little of the OS configuration. We have an ephemeral disk, and that's where we install our jobs and packages. We can install them. We can always reinstall them. We can pull them from the blob store and put them onto the VM again. And then the persistent disk, we do some special handling of that in some update scenarios. The agent will, when you install a job, it will pull jobs and packages from the blob store. On the ephemeral file system, we follow a certain file system layout where we have jobs and packages subdirectory, and then the auto-generated version that is there. This essentially means that we never mutate packages and jobs after we have installed them. So we have no side effects of actually installing a new version of a package. It's installed in a completely clean path. And then we do a little bit of garbage collection, but we normally leave the last version on the system so that if we need to do debugging, we can go back and we can compare two different versions of a job or a package. And then there are some common paths. So var vcap jobs, job name is always a symlink to the current version that is in the version directory. And then syslog, we log and have like things like PID files in a particular location. And then var vcap store is the persistent data. So if you run your MySQL or anything that needs persistent data, it's always in there. So the contract with whoever is writing the job is that, this is kind of keeping us honest. Like, if you care about your data, don't put it on the ephemeral disk because we will throw that away in some update scenarios. Put it on the persistent disk. So there need to be some rigor when you define your job definitions. I mentioned the stem cell. So we actually use Ubuntu in this, and we use Deb Bootstrap to generate a stem cell that has, it's like a minimum Ubuntu. It has the Bosch agent in it, which we use between the director and the agent to interact with a particular VM, with a job. The stem cells are a version, and we publish them. So if I want to test a combination of a release and a particular stem cell, I can download the stem cell, I can download the release, and I can do my deployment into that environment. So a stem cell update, we never update packages on VMs. So they're essentially immutable after we have started them up. The way we do OS update, and we do this routinely, I would say maybe every six to 7 weeks, or if there is a critical security update, we will update the entire farm. We will recycle every VM that is in the cluster with a known good image. And this means that in our dev environment, we can run through this process as many times as we want. And we can go from one state to the next state. And we can do that all day if there are any problems. So this is a stateful VM. It has a VM ID over on the left side, and you can see the persistent disk has an ID. The stem cell on the left side is like version 1, and then when we do the update of a job, we will follow a contract where we stop whatever is on that VM. We'll throw away the OS and the ephemeral disk. And then we will hold on to the persistent disk, the disk ID 45. And then we'll go through the cycle of creating the OS volume, we'll create the ephemeral volume, and then we will reattach the persistent disk and then reinstall jobs and packages on that. And we've done this a lot. And we have virtually no configuration drift. We can still do package and job updates without updating the stem cell. So that is a very quick one, the order of like a couple of minutes on hundreds and hundreds of servers. So that's that. So our deployments, as I said, we have a single declarative manifest describing your service. So this this manifest contains information about the release. So the director has a notion of the release as a managed resource, so you can reference that once that is uploaded. It has a network section. So Bosch manages your network. So we allocate IPs, or in the case of AWS, we can support dynamic IPs, but we still care about it. Like we register it back, and we will detect things like IP conflicts and stuff. So you don't do crazy things if you need to define static IPs. We also have, I don't have it in here, but we also can use names instead of IPs. So we have a built-in DNS server in the Bosch service deployment. Resource pools is where we take a stem cell and say, this stem cell is going to have become a VM with these characteristics, like memory characteristics and disk characteristics and a number of those. There's the compilation workers. So as I said, we compile packages as part of the deployment if packages hasn't been deployed before. And there is a binding between a binary compiled package and a stem cell, so that if we update the stem cell, we will automatically compile against a package against that stem cell. So jobs is our services. So a job can be things like a MySQL server, or it can be one of our reverse proxies that we have in the front. You can have multiple instances of a job. So if I have 100 web front-end web servers, they're like index 0 to 99. Jobs can also have like properties. The canaries is essentially our mechanism to, if there is a failure in a deployment, we want to fail fast. So if we start to update a web server and we have specified that we have two canaries, if any of them fail, so we do the deployment, we wait for a little while, and then we check the state of that job, whether or not it's running. If it's not running at all, we will fail fast, allowing you to still have like 98 web servers still working and just two broken. The update concurrency, and we call it maximum flight, is really how many we update. So we do the canaries, and then maybe we do 10 web servers at the time. And we're still kind of, it's larger chunks, but we can kind of fail if there's something that seemed to be going wrong. And then properties, so you can have properties at the job level, but you can also have them like semi-globally if you need to share some information between the jobs. We use these together with some deployment properties to parameterize configuration templates. But as I said, everything is declared in a single manifest. So even if you have a very complicated service, you have a common view of everything that is there. So we have virtually no side effect of a deployment. There is no discovered properties that is coming from servers. We try to declare it all here. And the deployment manifest, we usually say that a deployment manifest binds a release and the stem cell to a particular environment. So we can use, as I said earlier, we can use releases and stem cells in different environments. And we do this. We have a very rigorous process of when we say that we're code complete with something, we go from dev environments to staging environments where we do verification into production. And also, if you have regressions, we can go back and do the same thing over again and kind of inspect what is going on. So we have relatively few emergent properties of the deployed system. This describes compilation to some extent. So a package includes a packaging script, and it can really be written in any language that you want. The main contract that we have is that it needs to put all the output into an environment variable called Bosch install target, and that will translate into like var vcap data, packages, package name, and the auto-generated version number. I think that is Warden. So Warden is our kind of C groups instead of LXC, but it's something that we use. In the Warden package spec, you can see that it has dependencies on Ruby. Actually, what we do is that for every package that we compile, we spin up a new VM. So if this is a completely clear environment with no previous deployed, what it would do is that it would build a compile dependency graph. It would first compile Ruby, because we know that there is a dependency on it. It would store that in the blob store, and then it would create another VM. It would pull from the blob store and install on the compile VM. And then it would go ahead and compile the Warden package. And it would kind of do that dance. And for all our components, we are roughly 40 components. And I think that takes 10 minutes when we have a big, fresh release. So it's not that bad. So we're back to this, code and service. So the dotted line is kind of our job and package definitions that we get into a release. We deploy this to a director, and it goes into the blob store. And we kind of omitted the compile step here. But after that, the agent, the agent is kind of ready to go from a VM that doesn't have a personality, or it might actually have a personality. So the first thing in a Bosch deploy that happens is that we go out and we ask for the state of the world. So they report back which state are you in, and we can compare. We have a configuration hash where on the director side, we go through all the templates for the individual job and the indexes, and we generate a configuration hash, and we compare that to the configuration hash from the agent. And then we make the decision whether or not, does this VM need to be updated? So we will go ahead and do that. So that is get state. I mentioned drain before, and that is one life cycle hook that we have. We might add more in the future. So we drain. And that can be a no-op in a bunch of cases. We stop the job, and the main call that we have is apply. So that is a spec that is sent from the director that contains all the job information with all the blob store IDs and all the package IDs from the blob store. And it will, if it needs to make a change, it will, in that case, it actually, when you have already called apply, you actually have to make a change. And you know, and you can pull this down from the blob store. And then finally, you call start on it. So Bosch don't know much about what it deploys. There's some contracts in place that we need to be able to call start, and which invokes our service supervision infrastructure. But we have no detail. Like, if something is a MySQL service, we don't really know that it's a MySQL service. We don't have that detailed. We know how to apply, and we know how to start and stop. So at least our code is fairly simple when it comes to that. So this actually shows like common usage of Bosch. You target a director. You can upload a stem cell. You can go to this is our Cloud Foundry release 3. You do a Bosch create release. It actually remembers which release it created. You do a Bosch upload release. And maybe you edit the manifest. Maybe you bump the version number of the release, or maybe you bump the version number of the stem cell. And then you do a Bosch deploy. Virtually any change that we make in the environment is a single command that is driven by our deployment manifest. All right, so we're back here. We talked about most of these concepts. I guess we didn't talk about the CLI and the tasks. We have a notion of tasks in Bosch where I can run a task and I can see the output. And Vadim can be I'm in Boston and he's in Palo Alto. And he can attach and see the deploy activity that is going on. And we use that pretty extensively. CloudCheck is essentially FSDK for the cloud that is deployed. There are some scenarios where things can go wrong, and we have some scenarios that we can cover with our FSDK for the cloud. We have a Bosch SSH very similar to Juju. And then the tooling, like we have a directory and a message bus called NAT and a blob store. We do have a simple health monitor. The health monitor kind of understands, like it will not alert, if you're in the middle of an update, like all the alerts will not go off because it knows what it's actually updating. And then Micro, I mentioned earlier that Bosch is self-hosted so that in a particular cluster, you can install this micro Bosch first, and then you can deploy a real Bosch, and then you can do your deployment. So it's our bootstrapping mechanism that we have. So that's pretty much. So we're still working on our AWS and OpenStack stories. We're working on making our releases and jobs and packages more modular so that there can be more code sharing between different releases. We have some requirements that have come up around storage flavors. So maybe you need to say, we need to back this with SSD, so we need to have other storage rather than NAS or SAN. And then I guess we're looking at like configuration management tool integration. As I said, we have a very simple contract that goes down to apply and start and stop, but the things that is tangling at the bottom that is kind of making modifications to individual OSs, we're very primitive compared to like a Chef or a Puppet or any other tools. Although for us, it hasn't really been a problem. It is an open source project. We have mailing lists. We have a bug tracking system, and we use Google's Carrot for code reviews. There's a number of people that can contribute, and then we can code review and get that into the release. All right, so just before we go anywhere, if I can find my, I have no idea where my cursor is. Oh, there it is. So I think this is our tool. So this is pointing to my dev environment right now. And it's roughly the services that we had like in 2010 plus a bunch of other ones. I talked about resource pools earlier, and we have like two resource pools here, like the infrastructure resource pool and the DEAs and the addressing on them, and then the index numbers for the different ones. If I do a So task 394 was me making a deployment yesterday. So we can always go back. I think it's can always go back and see what happened in a particular deployment. So in this deployment, I had deleted my entire environment. And then it went through and built up the resource pool based on the stem cells. And then it created the instance VMs for a bunch of these. And then it started to create jobs. So it's fairly rapid operations once we make a change. So I think this is our whole deployment. And I think it's about, I think it's like 30-some VMs. And it took 12 minutes. Now, if I take our deployment manifest and I go to the DEAs, so say that we want to go up to 10 DEAs. So I change the resource pool, and you can see that it has a stem cell, it has a version and some cloud properties that we send through the CPI, plus some other like passwords and stuff. And down here, we only have two instances, so we changed the number of instances of the DEA. So DEAs for us is our execution agent. So our customers that upload their apps, they go into these containers where we run the app. So we have many of them. We have many more of them than we have of anything else in the system. And it will report the kind of changes that we are about to make. So we changed the size from 2 to 10. And this is my dev environment, so we'll see how it goes. It will create the missing VMs. So hopefully that doesn't take too long. So it will kind of it will adjust. We're not that much about like very dynamic. Like we run a service, and we want to know exactly the resources that we have allocated. So we try to make sure that we size our resource pools. We can win a little bit by pre-provisioning a resource pool and then come back and add more instances to a job. But in most cases, it doesn't really matter all that much. All right, so it's starting to, so it took about 47 seconds to create the VMs, which is a little slow. But this dev cluster is like two blades running on NFS, I think. So this one should be done pretty soon. I don't know what my concurrency is set to. It might be fairly low. It's interesting that it takes progressively longer. So here we have a canary. Like we make the first update. If it failed, we will bail immediately in the deployment. And it gives us an opportunity to go and figure out what happened. And we do have a timeout for, we say, wait for this long before you check the state of the canary. And then later on, you can have maybe less of a timeout to check the other ones. All right. So we use this fairly often. As our customer base grows, we can add capacity. We can add new jobs, or we can update versions to the job. And that's kind of what we mean with the full life cycle of the service and the job. So I think that's, just wait a couple of more seconds. So it took a little while, but we added 10 VMs and we installed them. We can also build new releases and deploy them, but I don't think I'm going to push my luck on it right now. All right. Questions? Crickets? All right, we're done.